The following audio was recorded at the Pacific School Leadership Institute, which was held October 21 and 22, 2021, at Waits Lake Open Bible Camp near Valley, Washington.
I was assigned the topic school as a mission, and I never did actually, I don't know if I actually chased down the reasons why I got the topic. But I should give a note of bias here. I have benefited very greatly from schools accepting students that were not from the church. My wife started going to our school when she was 13, and largely because of the friendship she developed there, stayed in the church setting. And so that's a personal example, I guess, of what the benefits that we can get from that. The other thing is we have accepted students that were not from our church, and that may have played into the factor as well. Just a few things to keep in your minds to start with here, and that is, I feel like my perspective as a parent with children in school is a little different than my perspective as a school board member without children in school. I would feel like I probably would evaluate some things differently. Part of that is you don't know till you get there, and you realize a little more when you turn your children over to school. You realize some of the trust that goes into it, and the trust in the teachers, and that they are going to take good care of my children. And so that plays into that. The other thing we need to remember is our schools in the West, we tend to be isolated. We don't have large Mennonite communities, with the exception of where I'm from, in a close context. You know, maybe there's two churches, but typically it's a church by itself. And so it's a church school. You go to the East Coast, and there is a little more of that broader multiple churches, communities sending to a single school. Maybe not real widespread, but it is there. So that probably is a little different element that you could bring in. I'm not going to touch on that, but focusing on a church school perspective. The other thing is, we're talking about people, and as we heard this morning, people are complex. We're not dealing with 2x4s that all fit in the same place, the same size that we can just stack. Dealing with people, and each time someone asks to send their children to your school, it's probably different. Sometimes they may have, maybe they're attending your church, maybe they're not. Maybe they're going to the other local Anabaptist church down the road that doesn't have their own school. It's all different, and we need to approach those things a little differently. I think another question we need to ask is, what is our vision for growing our church? Is it just to have large families and bring them into the church and they will have large families? Is that how we view our church's growth? Is just limited to us who have grown up here? If that's what our vision is for a church, this subject is really, it's a non-issue. So keep that question in the back of your mind. I would like to look at probably four main points. Sorry, I'm not used to using a computer for my notes up here, so you have to live with that. But first of all, should we use our schools as a mission opportunity? in our communities. And I'd like to look at some of the pros and cons of that. I would like to look at, can it work? And then what criteria should govern our judgment when we are making these decisions? And then lastly, what are some guidelines, things that we can do that will promote success if we decide to bring in children from outside of our church? So should we use our schools as a mission opportunity in our communities? Maybe I'll open it up. How many of you have had students from outside your church? Have or had, okay. So, quite a number. If you have, were they people who came to church and then came to school, or people who came to school and then came to church? Were they people attending church who sent their children to school, or people who sent their children to school and then, as a requirement of that, began attending church? How many would have had the children come to school first? Okay, so we have some. And then some would have had, were the families attending church and then send their children. Okay. We have a responsibility to reach out in our communities. I assume that is something we all agree on. We have that responsibility. And there's many practical ways that we can do that with our neighbors, in the business world. I believe our schools are a way that we can do this practically. We can use that as a tool to reach our communities, to be a blessing in our communities. It's a way to build friendships, relationships. You're thinking of the pros of using our schools as a mission. I think also our influence is greater on children than adults. And I realize that, again, there's not a one-size-fits-all, but children are much more influenced. And children are much more adaptable. They acclimate better. They can kind of read the signals and fit themselves in. Whereas an adult might look like they do, but they probably feel like a square peg in a round hole. Adults are set in their ways a lot more. And so it's an advantage to begin with children. They kind of learn the culture. Thinking of some of the negatives then, obviously the first one we probably think of is a bad influence on our own children. That's a negative we think of. It can put a lot of stress on the teachers and on the communities. And, you know, when we allow children to come to our school who are not a part of our culture, we open ourselves up for a lot of things. And part of that is, in our Mennonite bubble, I'll call it, we kind of know what to expect. We go to church with these people, and we know how they act, we know how they react, and we basically know how each other works. And that family always does that, and that family always does that, and they will react this way. We understand that. We don't even think about it too much, because it's just part of life for us. Church life. When we bring in other people, it completely upsets that, because we don't know what to expect from them. They don't know what to expect from us. And so it can be a real cause of stress. And one other thing, I did not go into research on this, something Lauren told me, just I think some of his research for his topic, he just said, hey, something to think about. As a church school, we kind of fit under a homeschool category a little bit. If it's just for our church people, we kind of operate a little more as a home school. That's how the government would view us. When we start taking other people, we kind of move into a different level, closer to a private school. And I think it's something to be aware of. I'm not saying it's a deciding factor, but something to keep in the back of your mind as school board. That can really vary by state as well, I'm sure. That would have been especially for Oregon. Any other thoughts? Any pros and cons as we think of using schools a mission?
In a way, it's a pro to have that students broaden their horizons a little bit. You know, okay. To get that outside perspective and teaches them to relate to people that they're not as used to.
Yeah. It's very valuable. We have to be willing to accept that.
Yeah.
The stress that can go along with that. Okay? Thank you.
So I apologize, I did miss a little bit, but is this being a mission to outsiders, or is this talking about our children?
This is primarily focused on people outside of our churches.
I think it could be both.
Yeah,
it could be both.
Yeah. No, if you read the description, I think that's the, it gives it that. Should it be only for our churches? Yeah. That's fine. I thought about it too.
When we were starting our school, that was only a few years back, and so I was able to be on I was in all this discussions on writing the Constitution up and all that. We decided not to make our school a mission just because, or not to make our school as a service to the community because we were just getting started and wanting to get our feet under this church. So that's where we're at.
Yeah.
That you're applying for all, it's in the school constitution that at least one of the members has to be active, one of the parents has to be pursuing membership. And that was watching, if you're familiar, you're called the Crossroads School out here close to the church.
Yeah.
It was a private school and they run into issues. And so there's some background that maybe isn't real apparent at first.
Yeah.
That I wasn't here yet, but the ones that were here that watched that, and it's very much Washington under the home school thing. Definitely.
Okay.
Think of as guidelines, and I think it's pretty common for schools that accept students from other families that there be a requirement of no television in the home. I believe Lake Creek might be that way even.
Yeah.
I think that might be in the Constitution here as well.
Okay. So can it work? And yes, it can. Now, I have a few examples. My wife being one. Now, every situation is different. I said that at the beginning. So her family had attended church for a number of years prior to her coming to school. John Smucker is another one many of you would know. And he would have said that the peer group that he developed at Lake Creek had a very profound influence on his direction in life. As far as where he went for church. So he would be another one who has mentioned that. I know it's not necessarily from the community as we think about it sometimes. But Jonah Vina, many of you would know him from WFTI. He would be another one that the peer group that he was a part of in school, again, directed him in the direction... It directed his life in a trajectory. There's others I'm sure you think of, and you have your own examples probably, it sounds like.
I have a question, and maybe I didn't think this through enough. Partly it's something that just that came to us over there. Should it make a difference who we allow in? Maybe where the family's at or a direction of the parents. Because when I lived here, I taught a lady that I was celibate to. Well, she was just kind of anti-public school. And I think she had a lot more values. But but she won't know about Southern Voiders. I think she maybe had some midnight factor on a couple of generations back. Does some of that make a difference?
Okay, so does direction make a difference? I think it does. Again, there's no two situations alike, and for me, it's very hard. There's not a one-size-fits-all. The other thing we need to think about is how do we define success in this? And it's maybe this should have been at the beginning. Are we trying to make more Mennonites? Are we trying to point people to Christ? Now, we talk about using our business as a means of evangelizing, a means of reaching out to others. How many of your business associates have you brought to your church? We generally, in many cases, consider that if we have a good relationship with someone, and if we can have a spiritual conversation with someone, we feel that we are benefiting the kingdom of God. We're helping each other closer in our walk with God. I think that's fairly accurate. Could we measure success in our schools is not whether or not they ended up in our church, but whether or not we helped them to know more about God. I think we need to be a little careful. If our goal is just to make more Mennonites, I don't think we're very often going to achieve that in our schools. It will happen occasionally, but it's probably not going to happen very often. And it's not that I don't feel that we have something to offer. I feel like we have a lot to offer. I don't think we realize sometimes the bubble we live in, and the ideal bubble we live in many times. But we do need to be a little careful how we're going to define success. Any thoughts on that? Any personal testimonies or observations from your school?
I think about when I went to school, there was a family that wasn't really seeking at that time, started sending their children, they were Roman Catholic, started sending their children to school. And I think they abided by the guiding principles that our board put in place, you know, with no television and all that. But they had already been influenced by the filth of the world. And they had a boy that was my age and then much younger ones too. And they started coming to school, and eventually the family joined the church. They did. And most of them, they had a very large family, most of them are faithful today. And so that looks like a success. But then the other side of that was that influence came into our school where some of those children, that one boy brought pornography to school, and the conversation that developed among my peer group was rotten. And some of the boys, I believe, as a direct result of that, have struggled all their lives. I've struggled with that. Some of them haven't turned out, you know, to where you wonder really what they are today. And I think that was a direct influence. So was it success or wasn't, you know? But I'm not trying to downplay that at all, because I think that more of the failure, with some of your introduction that you gave, that I think you're going to get into this, was the failure of the fathers in that school to maintain relationships with their boys and know what was going on. I just wonder if my own dad had reached into my life more and kept on with it, you know, could we have stopped some of that infiltrated our school because of that? So there were successes and there were failures because of it. But I still think it was the right thing to do. Could we learn from that? I believe.
Okay. Thank you. Very, very good at bringing out the two sides of success. Anyone else? Andy.
Of the various non-member families that have sent their children to our school over the years, in many ways the one that looked like the least promising for a long term, having people end up in the church. At least most of them are, not in our congregation, but in other conservative Mennonite congregations, and none of the others. So, it's hard to tell.
Okay. Okay, thank you for that. So what criteria then should govern our judgment? So we think we have a request. So we must send their children to our school. What should we use to determine whether this should happen or not? And I have some things down. I'm sure with the experiences of some of you others, I'm sure you would have more. I think, first of all, why are the parents sending their children to our school? Why would they like to? And, you know, we talked about people attending our church as another piece of that. They may want to. They may want a better education. Not that knowledgeable in that, but I would say probably on a grade level basis, our schools probably are keeping a fairly high standard overall. Better influence, or maybe it's an alternative to homeschooling. So right now we have a family from another local Anabaptist church sending their children to our school. They had homeschooled previous and they were getting overwhelmed, and so the younger children are coming to our school. Very strong family, very supportive. It's really not made a lot of a ripple in the administration of our school. Think of another one. This would have been 8 or 10 years ago. One of our families was living in town, and their neighbors wanted to send neighbors' grandchildren. The mom had attended it was a public school, but it was a very small community one, Harris. So it was almost a next thing to a Christian day, as close to that as you can get in a public school system, probably. And so that was her background, was the small school, and actually a lot of Mennonites would have went to that school. And so she looked at the system and said, I don't want to send my children to the main school. And she had been out of the country for several years and coming back and didn't want to put her children in the school. So the influence, the whole public school system. And so she wondered if they could send one of their boys. I think he was seventh grade. And should have refreshed my memory. I don't think he didn't come. He came for a few months. Maybe it was a year. And she decided it was not enough structure for him, and so she sent him to more of a military-style school. And he succeeded very well, actually, in that setting. His younger brother then came. I don't remember if there was much overlap. He came longer, but I think he ended up in that same other school. Now, part of that was the requirements that we had put in place, and one of those was church attendance. And we'll maybe touch on that a little more later, but they as a family went to the local, I don't know, Pentecostal, whatever church it was, and so he ended up coming in the evening to our evening services. Typically, we had one or two services a month, I think, was our requirement. So he would come in the evening. He often came by himself. His family was off doing some other activity, and so he would ride in with the family from church. Well, I think that was one of the major reasons he quit coming, is because he was coming by himself. The student was coming by themselves without the rest of their family. The rest of the family was off doing something else. So it was a he was fulfilling the requirements, but it was putting stress on the family level then. So, anyway, what, so back to the main point. Why do parents want to send their children to our school? Are we as a school up to the challenge? It takes more work. Can take more work. We're bringing people in that we really don't necessarily always know that well. And as we heard, there can be some pretty evil influences associated with that. I think the other thing we need to be aware of are our teachers up to the challenge. You know, the teachers are the ones that have to teach them, coming in from a completely different curriculum, completely different way of teaching and learning. They're the ones who bear the brunt of it, and I think they need to have some say in that. Any other thoughts? What are some criteria that should help us make the decision?
I had a thought that was not quite criteria, but times, you know, we've interacted with our community and they love our school, they like what they see, and they'd like to send them their children, and they wonder what it costs.
Yeah.
And that's probably a little different than criteria, but so we kind of throw the number at them, and it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, for you, how think you operate on school offering?
Yeah.
Each patron kind of knows about what it costs. So do you give that number then to your people that come in and they pay that?
It's probably, I think in the one case, they were probably couldn't afford it, and I think somebody probably paid just kind of, we were making the, probably nobody worried about it, or else someone took it on themselves to make sure that student was paid for, one or the other. I know the current ones, they've been given the number, but nobody keeps track whether they're responsible people. I'm pretty sure they're probably pulling their share. But it's not something where we keep track of it necessarily. Obviously, you can't do that indefinitely. I mean, there's a limit to that, how many students you can bring in without charging for it or whatever. Again, it's been a case by case. I think we would encourage as much as possible, unless somebody wants to step up and offer to take care of that for them. Anything else? Any other criteria? So as you think someone's coming and asking, is there other things we should think about? And I mentioned some of the pros and cons, and some of those fit into that, the influence thing, and how well do we know them? Should that affect? Anyone can sound good for an interview or two. I remember, so TV is almost becoming obsolete, not completely, but with the internet, TV is on the verge of being obsolete. They did not have TV, and their children had a limited amount of internet. Maybe should have dug further. I don't remember. Again, I think it makes a difference if your school has 50 people or 15. In a sense, just because the level of knowing what's going on is probably a little different. Andy.
One thing I think about as far as how well we know them, is, and this isn't limited to in relation to school, but I think there's a difference between people that know Mennonites from books and people that know Mennonites from actual contact.
Okay. Okay. Typically, if it's from books, it's short-lived, right?
Typically. No.
Has that tendency. Okay. So I'd like to look now at some guidelines that promote success if you decide to go ahead. first of all, as I mentioned earlier, we need to define what our mission is. Is it to point people to Christ? Is it to encourage them to show them Christ? Or is it to make Mennonites? And again, I say that carefully. It's not that I am saying we shouldn't try to bring people to our churches, but sometimes they don't end up there. Have we lifted them in their walk with God? And also, thinking of our mission. What is our mission? Is it to show people the right way to do things? Or is it to develop a relationship that's mutually beneficial? In general, people don't like to just be told the right way to do things. It's a very one-sided relationship. And it's probably not going to bear positive fruit if in the long term. People have things to offer us as well. I think another important one is a buy-in to the church community. And I didn't do a poll, but those of you who have had students from outside your church come, would they be required to attend church? At least some? Okay, so that's fairly standard. Looks like fairly standard. Now, I told you the example earlier of this boy named Colton, and he ended up coming by himself, and it basically in the end took him away from our school, I believe. At least that was a factor, because he was there by himself and not with his family. So I think it's important that the family buys into the community, the church community, not just the students. Now, I can give you examples where it was just the students. And it can work, but it's not the ideal in most cases. In that case, it needs to be the child's choice that this is what they want. And that's when it can work for just a child. And obviously it's probably going to tend to be older children. So also, we need to know each other. If there's going to be success, we need to get to know each other. And that comes under this thing of buying into the church community. Number three, we need to understand that our cultures are very different. And again, thinking of those from outside Anabaptist circles. The things that you take for granted and don't even think about, that you do, the way you say things, the pronunciation of what you say, those things can be miles apart. But it's what we're used to, and so we don't tend to factor those things in. And along with that, communication. You need to talk about things. The details that you're not used to spelling out to your church families, because it's just the way we do things, you may need to spell out. You need to try to think through, if I have no knowledge of how things are done here, what would it take to communicate that? Don't let the teachers bear the brunt of communicating between the parents and the board. My wife taught, and she had a boy from the community that was coming. And she kind of bore the brunt as an 18-year-old, very unsure of herself and her convictions, and she bore the brunt of the communication between the parents, who were at least in personality antagonistic, and the school board, the information tended to pass through her. And it would have been much healthier if it would have been coming straight from the board or from the ministry to the parents. So don't make the teachers need to communicate with the parents, but don't make them the avenue. Decisions that are made that the parents need to be informed of, the board should be taking that. I like to think about our children a little bit. Our children play a big part in this. They're the ones who interact the most with students, with fellow students. Are they welcoming and including to visitors? This goes to church too. Do you make sure your children talk to visitors? Take them to Sunday school. There's a side where we are as included as we include ourselves. There is an aspect. But if it's going to be successful, our children have to be friendly. They have to include them. Now, there's influence. There's the negative as well of those friendships. There needs to be a balance, but friendship, we need to treat them as people, not as a mission field. Now, I say it's a mission, but think of how long would you last in a church where you felt like everyone was trying to proselytize you every time you walk through the doors, help you over here and help you over here. Things take time, but appreciate people for who they are as a unique person. Students need to be loved for their individual uniqueness, not just because we're trying to convert them. We need to keep a proper proportion of influence. So influence tends to be with the majority, and I don't know how that always comes out, but there's dynamics. If 3/4 of our students are from outside of our church, they're going to have a huge influence on our school. You have one family, 3 students out of 20, it's going to be a lot less. Now, obviously, that depends on personalities a lot. But if you sit in a group and you make a statement and everyone else around you disagrees with you, maybe not real loudly, but basically disagrees with you, you kind of tend to back off. Most of us, anyway. Maybe not Malin. Sorry. I just know you like a good argument. But that's our natural tendency. And it works in children that way as well. But as that influence grows, the more we bring in, the more the influence grows. And I believe there should be some accountability with media usage. And that was brought up traditionally. Probably most of our schools would say no television in the home if they're going to come. But as I said, that's a little bit relative because pretty much get anything and a lot worse on internet. Again, probably if someone wants to send their children to our school, they have an awareness of that, hopefully, and a level of conviction there. Anything else? Someone here have, we have a couple minutes left. Something else you think of? Something to add? Andy?
And he sent our children now and found out it was because they had to pay their internet bill and it was shut off. they had different reasons.
not the letter of the law. Okay. Anyone else? Most of you had some experience, it sounds like. I didn't cover everything.
The point of it being part of the teachers is definitely something to consider. Sometimes you hire somebody from a different community, a young person, and then teach in your school, and you feel sorry for some usher didn't come, and then you expect that teacher to. We have a small school. I think we got up to close to half from other places. And it can be kind of difficult sometimes.
Yeah, for our school, we have family coming. And I just noticed it's my family's experiencing difficulty in the home. They know where to go. They know where Brotherhood is because they've seen it. And it gives us an opportunity to reach them with the love of Christ, even outside of the school setting.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And church and school go hand in hand in a lot of those situations. Most of them, probably. But I appreciate that thought. It they know where to go. Anyone else? I think we're basically out of time. Again, I think it can be very rewarding. And there's we talked about the influence on our children, and I appreciate what was said about parents taking responsibility for their children. It's difficult sometimes. I know I think about it in my own family, just where to draw those lines to keep them safe, and yet God has to enter into that picture as well sometimes. And I believe it can be a blessing in our communities. I think we need to do it very carefully.